Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to Sentimental Garbage, the podcast where we talk about the culture we love that society is often not much impressed by. My name is Caroline and... let's go, girls. And he's still the one we love. It's Jaff Owen.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
For your fourth episode on the
podcast. Third subject.
Yes.
Fourth episode.
We have the Gilmore Girls part one and two, which is one of my greatest creative achievements, I think.
It was 5 hours of... you cut it down to four.
I've never felt more like a musician than that day, because it felt like we were just stuck in this tiny booth. Yeah. We were both of us kind of pongy by the end of it. We were just talking and sweating so much. A brief bagel break, and then back in the studio.
It was
again.
A blur. The second, towards the end, listening back, I was like, I don't remember us even talking about this. But, you know, so we got through it.
And now we're back today. And this is the first time, I think, where I've just let you choose the subject.
I know.
Because the first one was for Tweed, the second one was for Gilmore Girls. And this, I asked you to come back on because I love you, and Shania Twain.
Yeah. I mean, Shania is actually probably the thing I'm actually qualified to be an expert on.
Yes.
Obviously, I'm not on Gilmore Girls. I suppose Twee I am, kind of, because of my band. But I'm a country music journalist.
Yeah.
That's actually my job.
It is. That is how
among
you...
Among other jobs, yeah. So this, I feel like I'm maybe qualified.
Yeah, so... But like... You're definitely qualified, but that's not why we have you here.
No.
Like, you became a fixture on this podcast from the day you told me about the Cindy horse.
Yeah.
Why is it about Shania specifically? Is she your... She's your diva, she's your icon, she's your everything.
Yeah, I mean, I've loved country music since I was like five, so Shania's... It would be natural that I would love Shania, but I think I was probably like a teenager when she was at her... When she explodes.
Yeah.
But I don't remember... I was aware of her definitely because country was a thing, but I was into like indie pop and stuff. So Shania wasn't really moving around in the circles I was into musically.
Yeah.
So it was probably a bit later in life that I came to adore her.
And what is that adoration comprised of? Apart from just great bangers.
She's just, there's just bangers. I mean, she writes from a sort of underdog perspective, I suppose, and she has been through a lot. I don't know if that shows through. And I think it's just like there's a joy. I'm very into joyful things, like things that lift you up because life's hard enough. And Shania does bring the joy. And it's just, I mean, she's just almost like the perfect country star for me.
Why is that? Because in preparation for this episode, because you know so much about her and you feel so emotionally about her, I almost didn't want to spoil myself by like reading a Wikipedia article about a divorce or whatever. I wanted to get it straight from the horse's mouth.
Yeah.
Your Shania's horse. Yeah. And so I know very little. I've listened a lot to the music and it's like, but I don't think it's particularly revealing music. Like it's an interesting, the two roads diverging in the yellow wood of Shania Twain and Taylor Swift, of these country pop artists who were like, oh, they have this background in country, and people from the country music scene arguing whether they're country enough or whether they've betrayed their roots. And I think it's very interesting to talk about Shania specifically in this moment, as we have this complete world domination from Taylor Swift. And we often, I don't know, you obviously have done a lot more reading than I have in country music and music genres that border onto country, but it seems like when people talk about the Taylor Swift legacy, they skip over Shania because it's kind of inconvenient to have another icon who's done the exact same thing.
She outsells Taylor. I mean, she runs so Taylor can dominate the world.
She invents,
it's not just Shania as like being a country icon, it's the sound as well that Shania's sound is that sort of combines like rock dynamics with country and pop, and you get and that's exactly what Taylor does on Red, which is the album that Red is Max Martin's production on that is Shania's production. I mean, Shania invents modern pop. It's early to go into it, but
talk to me like I'm a baby. I having a baby.
She's born.
Yeah, she's born in Canada.
From Canada.
Take us from there.
1965.
Yeah.
That's quite factual. And then she grows up very poor. Uh-huh. Like Dolly Parton poor. Like wearing like plastic bags on her feet and taking mustard sandwiches to school poor.
Wow.
Like really poor. And they keep having to move house because they keep defaulting on mortgages and rent. And
wow, I didn't know that at all.
So she's the same sort of Dolly Parton thing, like literally lives in poverty, basically.
Whenever a Canadian person lives in poverty, I'm like, but that shouldn't be.
That shouldn't be there.
I thought they had social security and all kinds
be
of
nice,
things.
Though. Yeah, it's still nice. Not real poverty, though. Her real dad leaves, her biological father leaves. I think her mum, when she's like two, her mum's already got another daughter from her previous husband who died in a car crash. The tragedy starts quite early on for Shania. Mm. And then at four, her mum remarries Jerry Twain, who's adopts Shania, and there's another child.
So Twain is her real last, well, not real, but you know, it is her real, it feels such a show name, Shania
I know.
Twain.
She's Eileen. Her real name is Eileen. So okay. The first, Shania is false, the Twain is real. Her stepdad, who's adopted her, is he's abusive. Her mum's depressed. So it's a pretty crazy household she's growing up in. And the stories from that time are just really bleak. And she's just in the middle of it, really. And then at eight, her mum sort of realizes she likes to sing and realizes that she might be a cash cow of sort. And so...
As many parents of gifted children before
exactly, her. Exactly, yeah. And so she starts singing in bars from eight, the age of eight. Like after midnight, when they've stopped serving, she goes to sing in bars.
And everyone thinks this is fine.
It's absolutely fine. It's not because we're not actually buying alcohol anymore. So it's fine that an eight-year-old would be singing.
Because
once they stop serving, you can still drink.
Yeah.
But as long as you're not serving, it's fine for an eight-year-old to be singing in a bar.
Yeah. Also, I think
you'd like
nice.
To see that, would you?
I think I would. Do you know what? I would like to see it.
Come midnight in the Dolphin, I would like to see that.
Do you know what? It would sort of puncture the atmosphere a bit. Yeah. It's nice. Yeah.
I might sort of just rein it in a little bit. I think, it's a child singing country music on the bar.
Like if it's like literally like an eight-year-old child singing about like how her man hit her or something, I would find that both moving and hilarious.
Yeah.
I would buy that child a drink.
Yeah, I think there'd be less fights. I imagine. I don't think there were, though. She said it was quite a violent, again, so she was just, there was violence all around her. And there was sort of a certain type of men that she sort of became quite aware of quite early on in life. I think her sort of mistrust for men and just sort of her, I don't know, her, not dislike, but I just think she sees a side of men throughout her life from quite early on. In bars, and she's kind of singing when she's 11. She can sing either in the bar, and then the strippers will come on, but she can't stay in the bar for the strippers. But then she can do her second set after the strippers.
Her second set,
yeah, after
at 11.
Yeah, but she can't stay in the venue while the strippers are on, because that would be wrong.
That'd be
too much. Yeah.
Wow, this feels like 19th century, like vaudevillian.
I know.
Like Coal Miner's Daughter. It's
and it must
insane.
Be like mid 70s, I guess 76. Yeah, something like that. Yeah. And her stepdad's still very violent at home, so it's quite a scary time. There's some crazy stories in her book about, you know, her mum being beaten unconscious and then Shania attacking him with a chair to stop him flushing her head down the toilet. It's quite crazy stuff, and it's really it's quite wild. So when she's like 13, she decides she's had enough. So one day when her dad is out at work, she like packs up the car and gets her mum out of bed because her mum's in bed most of the day. And then they escape to like Toronto to an abusive women's shelter for abused women.
At 13.
Yeah, so she's kind of looking after the family. Yeah. She is kind of the sort of the mother of the family. I'm not sure where her older sister is, but it's definitely Shania that seems to sort of take responsibility for all this.
God.
Yeah.
It's so interesting hearing all of that in the wake of like the Britney Spears book that's come out, and it being this thing of like an abusive home, a man at the center of it that's controlling everything, but it's sort of, instead of there being this like great moment of liberation and of fleeing, this thing of like everything just capitulates around him and he just kind of gathers more and more control. So it's like this almost sounds like the hopeful version of what Britney went through.
I mean, this. Yeah,
I feel like it's about to get even darker. Okay.
Yeah, no, I mean, yeah.
I love not knowing this, by the way. Just, like,
so yeah, they leave and they have a house in Toronto, and I think they're there for a couple of years, and then they move. Her mum moves back to Jerry to stay, and they live with his grandparents. And I think it still carries on. It definitely still carries on, and it's quite dark. And Shania is back and forth at that time between, she's kind of living in Toronto with a boyfriend or with some friends and stuff, and doing music, trying to do music. Even though the weird thing is she's not really that into music.
Really?
Well, she is in, she loves writing songs. Not into music is wrong. She's not into playing live. It's like, that's not really her thing. She doesn't really want to be a singer, like a live singer. It seems like she loves writing songs, and that's where she finds herself. That's her sort of coping mechanism, is to write songs. Mm. But when I sort of read stuff and went in interviews, she never seems like, it seems like mostly it was her mum that was sort of driving her wanting to be a star, and also that she's like the main breadwinner in the family.
Yeah. How can you even like separate out your love or passion for something when you're using it to support your entire family, you know?
And I think her it also becomes like a point of contention between her mum and her dad, which is like, because they'll use money to put gas in the car to take Shania to sing in a strip club, where she's singing, and then he hasn't got enough petrol to get to work the next day. So it's, she kind of feels herself sort of being the reason as well for why they're arguing a lot of the time.
Okay.
So she's back and forth. And then at 17, she gets a job as a foreman for a forestry commission. Well, you weren't expecting that.
No.
It's like a, I guess it's like a logging town. And,
sure, yeah.
And her family get into like a sort of deforestation replanting business. Uh-huh. And so she's the foreman for some reason. I don't know why.
Shania Tain is the foreman of a logging business.
Yeah, it's great.
And she's what, like 15? Like,
I think she's like 17, 16, 17 when she does that. It's a good twist.
It's a great twist.
Because I knew the story, and even when I read the, I was like, oh, I'm still surprised when that one comes along. So she's back and forth, and still, but she's doing music mainly most of the time.
Are there any songs about the logging years?
She does write the big hits, but the logs don't really make it into there. But I guess it's all, you know, it's all in there, isn't it, with Shania? Like, I think that's the thing. Like, everything she's been through is in her songs, but never, I never feel like
never
it's
overtly.
Explicit. Yeah, never, like, it's not like, these are songs about this, which is quite a sort of, it's one of the reasons I like her in a way, because it isn't this sort of autobiography.
Yeah.
To sort of just, I think she's sort of more fun than that in a way.
Yeah.
And then, so that carries on, and then in her, she's got a manager by this point, a friend of the family, and she's sort of starting to kind of get somewhere, like just starting to meet people and get somewhere. And then when she's 22, her parents die in a car crash.
No.
Yeah, so that's like...
Well, good riddance.
I think she did still love them.
Right.
I mean, she's a very compassionate person. She does, like, the mad thing in reading her book is, like, she has compassion for anyone who's ever wronged her. Even, like, her abusive stepdad, you know, her mum who made her play, you know, there's no anger there, really. She's just compassionate. So her parents die. Obviously, now so she has to go home to Timmins, Ontario, to look after... She's basically now the mother of her sister and her two brothers. She's basically the mother of the family, basically. So she looks after them. So it looks like it's all over. Which she actually say in one point that she kind of feels almost free when they die of the sort of obligation to be a performer. There's a point where she's like, although it's really tragic, she has to go home and like go through the coroner's reports and stuff for the car crash. And the whole thing is that all falls on her. And it's quite a strange thing to imagine anyone at 17 having to take on. And then so the, she has to look after the kids, basically. And the way she does that is by going to this, like, fun park, Deerhurst Fun Park, it's called, where they have people performing all the time. And so that's how she sort of...
A fun park.
What's a fun? What they call resort? A fun resort.
Oh, right.
Fun park. It's a fun park. Resort.
And that's what they'd call it in Canada.
It's a fun.
Fun park.
It's a fun park where she performs rock and pop songs,
right,
and country songs.
Okay.
For people, and that's that. And then
I imagine, like a county fair sort of situation.
Yeah, but it's like, you know, like
there's pigs, there's candy floss, there's a Ferris wheel.
No,
no.
No, that is a fun park. No, what I've just, that is what I've, it's more like Butlins.
Right. Okay. Yeah.
What's that? What do we call that?
Holiday park. Yeah. There we go. Yes. Yeah. No, okay. I have a clear.
Yeah.
An
and she performs like 7 nights a week. And so that's what she does. The line for her
becoming Shania Twain just seems so unfathomable from here. She's a grieving, like 20-year-old who's a foreman of a logging company and is now singing in a Butlins.
Yeah. It just doesn't look, it's just, it never looks
like.
She's not
looking bright.
No, even when you read the book, you're like, maybe this doesn't end the way I thought it did.
Even surviving to this point and making a living at the Butlins, at the logging factory as well, that's a success story enough.
I know.
Within the context of this life.
I know, yeah. It still would have been enough.
It would have been enough.
It would have been enough for Eileen.
Yeah, but not for Shania.
But not for Shania.
Fuck.
So, and I guess some, then, and this must be 80s, sort of late 80s. And then she's got a manager and someone spots her, or she's like, someone brings her to the attention
of
someone.
She's also gorgeous.
Well, yeah, in 2009, there was a study by it was a Toronto university that said she had the most perfect face.
Well, she does.
Yeah, and that's not just us saying that.
Yeah.
That's actually...
that's the University of Toronto, a completely unbiased body.
Yeah, I guess that helps.
She does have a perfect face.
Yeah. I mean, and she, you know, she's... She's obviously going to be like a big star. As soon as someone spots her, like, well, that's going to work. She's got an amazing voice. She's got like this rasp in her voice. Mm-hmm. Like, she's got a sort of Karen Carpenter.
Yes.
As if Karen Carpenter had smoked like 20 Benson Hedges. She's kind of got that voice.
Yeah.
And that's like, that's the dream, isn't it?
Sweet but tough, which is what you want a country singer to sound like, right?
And she's writing songs as well. So she's a good songwriter at that point as well. But it's not, she signs a record deal. First album comes out, but there's none of her songs on it.
Yeah.
So things sort of start picking up, and that's like 93. Mm-hmm. But it was a bit weird because, like, the best song on it is probably the one she wrote, and there's like a couple of hits, and it's not a huge success at all. I think it's like 57 in the charts. But what it is famous.
And she's still in Canada at this point.
No, she's now she's kind of. Now she's Nashville. She's definitely gone to Nashville to sort of to do country. And the kids are old enough, her little brothers and sisters are old enough to have left. She waits for them, basically. Mm. She waits until they're old enough to look after themselves, to do it. So she's like 28 at this point.
Which
is so old.
That is so, for like women in pop music to really get started at 28 years old.
Yeah.
Kylie Minogue was having her comeback at 33.
That's mad.
You know?
I mean, it's 28 years old. And you don't, she's like a sort of old for a footballer, you know? But then that's kind of why another reason I love Shania throughout this podcast.
Yes.
The reasons I love Shania will slowly be revealed.
This is all part of it.
And it's because she sort of ties into that sort of adult women, like adult, I guess here in country music, like it is quite a unique genre because it's like music made by adults for adults and about adults. And no other genre really does that. Like it doesn't really. This is pre 2006. Shania.
2006 a big year for
Taylor. She changes it all. Anyway, when Shania's coming out, she's just like, that's kind of standard for country to be talking about the adult female experience. So it's like divorce, you know, all the things divorce, like you can have children in country music and sing about it without it being weird.
Yeah.
Like you can't do that in pop music. It just just doesn't really happen.
Yeah, and like murder ballads and very mature. It's and like all, alcoholism and domestic abuse and it's not all there.
It's not much about being teenagers until Taylor Swift comes along.
Yeah.
And even like the teenage stars are singing about being adults. They're singing adult songs. It's quite, so at 28 it fits in that she would be singing like songs about being an adult.
Yeah.
And like the adult experience, especially for women. And it is quite unique in that way.
Wow, I'd never thought about that before.
It's what makes it so special.
Yeah.
So she's but her songs aren't on that first album really, but they are sort of it's a good it's a good album, but she's disappointed because she's not really getting much creative input into it, but she does get very creative in the videos, which is kind of what she becomes, which she first like becomes famous for the videos more than the songs probably.
So what's the first big video to hit?
So the first big one is What Made You Say That, and it gets banned by Country Music Television.
Why?
Because of her midriff, because she's shown her midriff.
Fuck off.
Yeah, it's mad. And obviously, I guess country does have that sort of Christian conservatism, like, running through it. Like, you always have to be aware of that if you're making country music. I don't. But, you know, Americans do. Yeah. Like, appealing to that or sort of stepping too far outside of that. And country is kind of like this game of seeing how far you can push that, push against Christian conservatives, like, to, and not, like, completely blow it. And so if you watch the video back, it's I mean, it's mad to think. I mean, she would like to, I don't know when Christina Aguilera's Dirty's come, that's probably like 4 years away from that, you know. And it's like a raunch culture's like on the horizon. Madonna's put out the Sex Book in like, in 92, and then they're worried about a midriff.
But Shania Twain's midriff.
Yeah, which becomes kind of the thing, like, people talk about her midriff loads.
That's so nuts. And that's so crazy.
Yeah, and they really, like, it really is, like, and that's, like, in all the reviews, it's, like, about her midriff.
So, okay, try and square the circle for me within the world of country music, whereby we have adult women singing adult songs about adult things, up to including, you know, marriage, abuse, sort of domestic problems, all kind of stuff. But the visual acknowledgement of that sexuality and that womanhood is absolutely verboten.
Yeah.
Like, does everyone just look like Jewel at this point? Like, just like long blonde hair and...
I mean, I mean, Dolly Parton's been, you know...
Yeah, exactly. But so Dolly Parton's tits have been in our face for 20 years at this point. So I don't understand why Shania's midriff is so controversial.
It's a fair, but I get, I don't know. I mean, it's shocking that it is, but you're right. Like, it's not like country music didn't have like sexy moments, you know, like in the 70s and... And the 80s.
I read a quote somewhere that was some contemporary country male star at the time calling Shania the world's highest paid stripper.
Yeah, I think Steve Earle calls her that.
Steve
Earle. And Steve Earle's a good man, you know.
No, he isn't.
But he's not now. No, I know. But,
he's a good man.
He's like one of the good ones, you know.
Right.
Like, so it was like, I know when I read that quote, I was like, come on,
that
Steve.
That is nuts.
Prick.
Prick.
That's just, yeah, I mean, what? That was just how she was seen.
So how is Shania digesting all of this at the time? Is she like knowingly this person who is like from poverty, didn't organically fall in love with music, but just can do music?
She loves songwriting.
Yeah, yeah. But is she just like a part of her is like, I am a hot woman, I'm going to make $1 million?
I think she just knows she wants to do her own music and she wants to put her songs out there. It's her relationship with performing is quite an odd one. She's sort of like reluctant, but she's very good at it, and she's got an amazing voice, and so she doesn't feel like she's ever that excited about going out on stage, certainly when in the early years. When she talks about it, it's not as if like she can't wait to get on tour, and she doesn't tour the first two records, which is quite mad.
She doesn't tour until she's three records in
before she tours, which is correct. Yeah, so she's put this out, and I think she's disappointed that she's not that it's not her songs and stuff, but she is excited about being creative in the video world, which she makes, you know, some quite good videos early on. But then she's aware that like she could get dropped, like she hasn't sold enough records to sort of guarantee a next record. And then she gets this phone call from Mutt Lange. So Mutt Lange, he's like the world's like most, the biggest rock producer. He's done like AC/DC's Back in Black.
And his name is Mutt.
Yes, his name is Robert Mutt Lange, Mutt with two T's.
Okay.
And when Shania signs the CD, she famously just puts one T. She's completely unaware of Mutt Lange.
As unaware as I am.
I mean, he's not really from my world either.
Yeah.
But I know, obviously, I know Shania, so I know Mutt Lange. Yeah. He's made some records that some of my male friends absolutely love. AC/DC's Back in Black, all the Def Leppard albums. Mm-hmm. Some dreadful records.
Some really bad records.
Brian Adams.
He wrote
Everything I Do, I Do It For You.
Oh, what?
Parentheses, of course, around the first bit. Which I think is the main thing. He's not the main thing he brings to Shania, but he definitely brings brackets.
She loves a bracket. She loves an exclamation point and she loves a bracket.
Yeah. I think the brackets is him.
So we're referring to the titles of Shania's songs.
Yes.
So there's like the exclamation points are like up and ka-ching.
I love man, exclamation mark. I feel like a woman, exclamation mark.
Yeah.
Quite unnecessary.
And then the brackets are, what are the bracket songs again?
Don't Be Stupid.
Brackets. You know I love you.
Yeah. What are the brackets? You always want to get one. Yeah, it's like, want to get to know you. That good. Which way around the brackets on that?
Yeah.
I think the brackets are around want to get to know you. And then it's like, I mean, it's and then exclamation mark at the end of that. But I like the exclamation mark because I feel like they're quite a sentimental garbage thing anyway.
They're just so sentimental garbage. Yeah. You pointed out that when I was texting you, I was really going in exclamation points just before we even identified Shania Twain. There should be an entire episode on the exclamation point because I do text with a lot of them.
I mean, I do as well.
Yeah.
I imagine you're made to feel ashamed of them.
Yes, frequently.
Yeah.
And I've completely forgotten that. But what it generally is because I'm a bad texter and I just leave it days or whatever. And then I want to communicate to whoever I'm texting that it's not that I don't like them or I don't care. It's just that I have, you know, limited resources for texting mentally. And I just want to show lots of enthusiasm and willing. So it's like 6 exclamation points.
Yeah, I think I've got 6 in each. Yeah. Yeah. I just do because I am actually that excited. I'm an excitable person. If someone wants to go for a drink with me, I'm excited at the idea of that. I'm like, oh, yes. It's not me going like, yes.
Yeah.
It's like I'm excited. A reason to go out. A reason not to be in. So I use them loads.
So funny. Punctuation should be an episode of this podcast because you know what punctuation I do feel snobby about? Ellipses. I hate people who use ellipses in texts.
What's an ellipse?
Like a dot, dot, dot.
Oh,
yeah. I find it smug. I find it weird.
Yeah, I think I might use them, but I'll stop now.
You can stop.
Yeah, my girlfriend actually did say she didn't like them either.
Like, why do you think you're like God's gift? Like, you think I'm supposed to be so horny because you're not committing to like, I'm not going to fuck you. Anyway.
So ellipses. Okay. So
ellipses, parentheses.
I think parentheses are definitely. So I think
Shania's like, friend. Is that a country music thing, though? To have
no,
brackets?
And I think it's. I think that comes from Mutt.
Mutt Lang.
I think that comes from him.
Yeah.
I don't see because he's used them earlier in his career on that Brian Adams song, which doesn't even make sense. Everything I Do is in brackets. So the name of that song is "I Do It For You."
So dumb.
I hope that's right. Loads of Brian Adams fans absolutely livid. You don't have Brian Adams fans listening to this.
I think we have an enshrined place for a baby when you're gone on this podcast, but otherwise I don't really acknowledge it.
Okay.
I only acknowledge his Spice Girls adjacent work and I think that's right and good. But where were we in the Shania story? In the tale?
Exclamation marks. Where have we got? She's met, so Mutt Lang. So he's a huge rock producer. Like he's like Back in Black by AC/DC is like the second biggest selling album of all time. Mm-hmm. He's doing well. He's living in England. He loves country music. Mm-hmm. And Shania, she loves rock music. But she's unaware of Mutt Lang for some reason. Uh-huh. He asked for a signed CD. It's a weird thing for a multi-millionaire.
It's a real horny gambit, though. Yeah. Is this going in a horny place, this story?
Oh, yeah, this is going in a horny place.
Okay, good. Because that thing of like somebody who's like so far above you in the sort of in your industry asking you for something signed is such a horny move, I think.
Is it happened to you?
No, but I'd like it to.
Okay, yeah. I guess that is quite a move. Yeah, that
is a huge move.
It's a huge move. He's not just like, I collect CDs by country singers and I like them to be signed. Yeah. No, you're right. Because he's reached out to her publicist, horny. I think, to get it. So she signs it.
If like, I'm trying to think of one fuckable male novelist. Like if Karl Ove Knausgaard came up to me and said, like, I'd like you to sign this with his huge Norwegian hands. I would flood my basement. Do you know who that is? Fine. I would flood my basement.
Huge hands. That's all I...
Huge. I'll show you a picture in a bit.
I don't know. So Mutt.
Yeah, it's a huge move. Huge move from Mutt.
She doesn't know how big his hands are. She doesn't know anything about Mutt. She spells his name wrong, which imagine that coming back. His name is spelled wrong. Mm. It's like, oh, okay.
Mm. That's even hornier.
He's a bit older than her. I think she senses he's a bit older on the phone. They chat on the phone loads. For hours on end, she sings her songs to him down the phone. He plays her stuff he's producing and he's written. It's really and also he always pays for her. So she rings him, he rings her back. Because he's like a multimillionaire rock producer.
I'm just imagining her like on this landline in her kitchen, just like twirling the things between her fingers. And he's in his big important office in England.
I know. I'm going to ruin that for
really
you,
into this. I know he's going to turn out to be a total break.
Also, she's living with her boyfriend, Paul, at the time.
Paul!
And Paul's family. But there's not, romance isn't in the air. It's just like, oh my God, we are such a similar.
But Paul thought differently, though.
Paul was absolutely fine with it. He's no worries there. He'd probably Google Mutt then. Although, actually, you couldn't Google. There were no phones. There were phones, obviously. There were phones.
There were phones. But
like,
Shania was tying it up.
But she doesn't Google him. She doesn't see what. Because she can't, I guess.
Because it hasn't been invented.
No. Yeah. But she doesn't go to the library and get a book to look at a picture of Mutt Lange. She just thinks. So she imagines him as this. Like older guy, balding with a ponytail still. So that's she has quite a weird picture of him. Anyway, they're swapping song ideas and just really getting on. And then it's 6 months before they meet. They're calling like every night. Mm. And record label don't know anything about this. Mm. They're just wondering like when Shania's going to make a new record, and where all her songwriting's going, And then they meet at the Nashville Fanfare, which is like a country music fanfare that you have every year on June the 1st. Mm. The date's important.
It's not my sister's
important.
Birthday.
It's not, is it? And that's why it's important. And they meet there, and obviously Mutt isn't, he's actually kind of hot. He's got like big curly rock hair, which Shania loves.
Can I Google it?
Make sure it's like 1993, though.
Okay. Why has he had a tumble since?
Well, I guess that was quite a while ago.
Fair enough. The curly hair, I do get it. He looks like one of the Allman Brothers.
Yeah.
Yeah. I get it. It's a fun vibe. It's like,
and especially for Shania, who likes a rocker.
Yeah, it's like a very Scandi rocker look.
Yeah.
I would say.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's South African.
He's South African.
South African, actually. Mm. Yeah. But lives in London. I think he's like, so maybe South African, British.
So I've just spoiled a major
that's
part of
fine.
The story.
It happens very quickly.
Yeah, so they get married.
So they meet in June, and then they get married in December. And they also write a record in those 6 months. So she, when she first meets him, she's like, oh, actually quite hot. But they don't immediately fall in love. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's obviously quite quick because they're married. But
they've been cooking on the six-month, like, phone chat time.
Yeah, and so they've got a lot. And they're still, and so they start writing together in person, traveling everywhere there with their two guitars. They call themselves a two-guitar family because they go around with two guitars, which is so cute. And, they write Come On Over. They write Woman In Me, sorry. So they write Woman In Me in 6 months, which is mad. And his production, which brings us back to where we began. He comes from a heavy metal rock background, and he brings that production that he's used on these huge records by Def Leppard and Bryan Adams, and he brings it to country, basically, and changes the world.
Changes the world forever.
Yeah. The first single is like Whose Bed Have Your Boots Been Under?
Yes.
Which is an absolute banger. But quite a country banger. Like that's the sort of most palatable.
So Come On Over is their album. Sorry.
No, Woman In Me is the first. Yeah, is the one they write in 6 months.
That hair.
Yeah, it's shot by Bo Derek's husband.
What?
Yeah, the cover.
Wow.
Facts.
Woman In Me. Okay, lots of long titles here. But yeah,
Any Man of Mine's the big one, which they saved to be the second single, because it's kind of mad to listen to it now and think that people at the record label were worried about this record, like they didn't think it would sell, because it sounds like the way we hear country now, because
precisely.
She reinvents country and pop music in such a way that it doesn't feel alien to us, but it felt quite mad in 93, it must have sounded insane.
So who was the biggest country
Garth
star?
Brooks. Garth Brooks is okay. At his height. And Garth's like doing stadium country in a different way.
And how does that sound?
It's just rock and country. Quite like high pop production, but it's similar, but not as poppy, I suppose. Mm-hmm. It doesn't have the sort of... Shania does bring it, like a really heavy pop element to it, mm-hmm. that isn't there in Garth's.
And people are pissed about this?
Yeah. I mean, because country's whole thing is like authenticity.
Yeah.
And that's its big, like, it spends most, like, country journalists, most of their job is arguing about whether something is country or not.
That's so dumb.
It's so dumb. And now Americana exists and people argue about whether something's Americana. It's just, that's literally your job. It's like to argue about these things. It's very boring. Because as far as I'm concerned, everything is.
Yeah.
Even things that aren't. Yeah.
So it's interesting because it is one of those genres of music that is often kind of maligned and made fun of by people who aren't related with it. So I guess the need to protect the integrity of the thing that is already fringe.
Yeah.
You know?
That probably is. I mean, I think people do have that sort of, and they listen to anything but country idea.
Yeah.
But that's probably more like, I think that's more to do with people distancing themselves from working class tastes.
Yeah.
Especially in like America. I think that's why, you know, it is seen as like the music of the working class, the white working class.
Because that's what's surprising about this. Because I think I thought that like, oh, you know, Shania comes along and she's Canadian and she's hot and she's poppy and she's fun and everyone's grossed out by it. But it's like that, that song, Any Man of Mine, I think it was such a, it didn't sound out of place to me at all as a country song. And also she's got this like, she's got the backstory of a country singer, and it just all feels so perfect.
It's what's so odd about it. I think one of the reasons like people are just like the sort of media or the, you know, journalists are distrustful is just because she's a woman, attractive, possibly Canadian. Like, possibly because she's Canadian. I don't think that doesn't really come into it that often. Her being Canadian doesn't seem to be a reason that I've ever read for like.
Yeah.
It genuinely seems to be the videos that mean they sort of don't trust her as an authentic.
Yeah.
And then obviously she starts working with Mutt. Mm-hmm. And he's.
And then they get married.
He's an outsider. Yeah.
So what happens to Paul? She just bins him off.
Yeah. It's Paul. He doesn't. He's obviously around as a character in the book, but. I would say that
Is Paul related with music or is he just Paul?
He's just there. She does a lot of writing there. Uh-huh. And obviously she's on the phone a lot. But I imagine Paul, I don't, but she loved Paul.
True.
But it was time to move on. Uh-huh. And she doesn't move on to like to be with Mutt. She moves in with her manager for what I work out is about 3 days. Then she moves in with,
Good.
And then they go away. They're just like traveling around. They go to Mutt's house in Spain. They write in London and Mallorca, and they're just.
And what kind of a living was she earning prior to this? I know she was signed, but clearly it hadn't gone well for her.
She's living with Paul and Paul's parents. So.
Right. So not great.
It's probably not like loads. I mean.
Yeah, she's pushing 30. She lives with her boyfriend's parents.
Yeah.
Her first album hasn't gone well and people think she's dressed too sexy.
Yeah.
She's like Erin Brockovich.
Yeah, she is. Yeah, basically, But she's about to show them, just like Erin. Yeah.
She is.
Yeah.
She's going to memorize lots of phone numbers.
She could do that. That's the sort of thing Shania would be good at.
That feels right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They make this record. They get married while they're writing the record. And then they present it to the label. Who are like, what have you been doing?
What are you guys
very secretive. But then they're very excited because she obviously doesn't know how big a deal Mutt Lange is.
Yeah.
And so when they're like, I'm working with Mutt Lange, they're like, what?
Oh, well, Mutt Lange has found this like random, gorgeous woman.
And they're like, you're working with like one of the biggest producers in the world.
Yeah.
Well, that's fine, Shania. Oh, and you're also married.
Carry on, Shania.
And also, we're probably going to get mates rates on the production. Like, that's fine. I mean, I don't think that. So,
oh, my God.
But it is. And then they sort of start taking it to country radio and. And people are shocked. Like that's why they had to leave with Who's Been Under, because it's the most country song on there.
Yeah, it is.
And Any Man of Mine.
Any mention of boots or footwear is very country.
Absolutely love it. It's the tropes. We love the tropes. It's just a game of tropes.
Yeah.
Country is just...
The bottle of whiskey, the pickup truck, the boots.
The divorce. Divorce. It's all there. And that's like country's skill is like... It's like finding a new way to talk about something that's been... sung about like so many times. Mm. That's literally the game that everyone plays. That's why it's such a weird sort of insular world, but like also quite a sort of fun genre. Like most people try and break out of that, whereas Country's whole thing is it tries to write about the things that are always written about in a new way.
That's so interesting. Because I remember when years ago, me and Gav did like a road trip of the South in America. So obviously it was a lot of country music stations.
Yeah.
This was before you could automatically sync your phone to a car radio. Yeah. And it was a simpler time because you got to know the geography of a place through radio.
Yeah.
And it was just this thing of like, oh, wow, we're hearing about another whiskey bottle.
Yeah.
We're hearing about another pickup truck and another like thing about a factory closing. And it was just like, we had this like word, there's like a word cloud of like 100 words that just keep getting swapped around. And it is oddly comforting, especially if you're like in this landscape that's made for driving long distances.
I know,
and there's
Texas,
a familiarity to it. You know, it's lovely.
It does make sense. Just driving through Texas like last week, and it's just so huge. And it's like country makes so much sense there.
Yeah.
And not because you're surrounded by whiskey and stuff. It makes sense to the landscape that it would be the same song because the landscape hasn't changed. Why would the song?
Yes.
So they just changed the lyric.
And the problems haven't changed.
No. They're still adult problems.
Yeah.
But, you know, it is interesting in that way because it doesn't really make an attempt to move the melodically and sort of as song, like they kind of remain the same. It's really just the lyric that changes. It's quite a lyric first. Mm. I mean, it is a very lyric first genre. It's all about the lyric. It doesn't really matter what the tune can just be the same one they had on the last record. You know, it's so.
And also thinking more about it and thinking about sort of like, sort of below the Mason-Dixie line or whatever, and people singing in their own accents, and how really that is the only dignified place within mass media they will hear their own voices. Because if you have a Southern voice in most sort of TV, movie or whatever, there's a bias that's coming with it. There's a pantomime that's coming with it. It's like fairly offensive, you know.
Yeah. So, that's a really good point. And in the same way that the rest of the media, I guess, is like LA and New York are the sort of the places that are celebrated in country. Yeah. They're not, you know, a country band from LA will find it. People will eye you with suspicion.
Yeah.
If you're from LA, because it will be seen as inauthentic. I mean, authenticity is.
It's so interesting how similar it is to rap in that, like, it's another genre that is, because it comes from poor people, is obsessed with authenticity.
Yeah. And the idea of authenticity is just, it's like Will Smith isn't seen as authentic, even though he's very authentic to an LA experience.
Yeah.
But authenticity is only, you can only be authentic if you're authentic to something, like to a working class experience.
Yeah.
So the whole idea of authenticity is like this weird construct in itself.
Yeah.
Which is it's the same. And rap and country are pretty much the same genre.
They are.
They're themes.
It's the same sort of like cloud of words that are used in different orders.
It's outlaws, and it's that idea of being against. You know, so they do have a lot in common. And virtually everyone I know who's a country fan is also a rap fan.
Yeah.
Like they do sort of that sort of mythic America. It's just just another type of myth that they're holding up.
Mm.
A lot of guns.
a lot of guns on both sides.
Awful lot of guns. More guns than, you know, than in pop.
Yeah, it's like, what is that thing that, you know, in England about how the upper classes and the lower classes have the most in common because they're both obsessed with, what is it? Family, dogs and smoking inside. The same with rap and country. Obsessed with guns and being slighted.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, revenge is huge in country, you know.
Yeah.
So they start working together. We're still there. They've written this album and it's huge. It sells 15 million copies, which is more than Taylor's sold of any album still.
15 million?
Yeah, she sold I think that's more than 1989.
Wow.
Which I think is her best-selling album. I hope that's right.
God.
Well,
it's also, I feel like that's slightly unfair because Taylor is in a world
you know I love Taylor.
People aren't buying CDs.
It's true. But it's still a lot.
It's a lot.
It's a lot.
Yeah. It's a hell of a lot.
And it's a lot in 1993. Still,
yeah.
You know, so it's still a lot.
So this is the beginning of like Shania breaking all kinds of records, right? Like,
yeah, in country, definitely. She hasn't really, she's sort of starting to cross over. Any Man of Mine is certainly appearing.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices
down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
And Billboard and stuff. So she started to, she's still a country phenomenon, really. And yeah. She is a phenomenon. Mm. Like her and Garth are, and they're huge. As you know, country hasn't seen anything like
it's
them.
It's so strange. I think of them as contemporaries, and I don't think of them as contemporaries at all. Yeah, he just seems like such an ancient concept to me. Because he's the biggest selling artist in Ireland.
Yeah, I was going to say, how much did, because Ireland loves country. I went to see Garth in Ireland.
Yeah, yeah. And he sold out like three nights in Croke Park.
It's incredible. Yeah. Yeah, and the whole of Dublin was... Yeah, was obsessed. Turned over to him. Like there was like shops which just became Garth shops.
Yeah,
and people were outside their houses just selling Garth hats, just outside in their front gardens.
It's so I have like no relationship with Garth Brooks. My parents love Garth Brooks, but like it never touched off of me for whatever reason, which is weird because I feel like all their other stuff I sort of picked up, like the Les Miserables soundtrack and Billy Joel, but for some reason Garth Brooks had nothing to do with me.
It was too much.
But yeah, Ireland just loves to embrace a man with a guitar. Like, yeah. I was, you know, 30 years old before I realised that David Gray isn't Irish. Because I just was obsessed with David Gray.
They do love country music over there. That's like, I mean, they've got their own sort of, they've got their own country artists.
Yeah.
Daniel O'Donnell, Philomena Begley. I mean, so they do have their own country. And I think, like, American country artists love Ireland. Mm. And they see it as like, but then like Ireland is half of what country music is built on, like the Irish influence.
That's true, folk music. Basic, yeah. And, yeah.
Like, and that comes from Scotland and the fiddle and it meets like the banjo in the fields.
Yeah.
And that's what you get country music from. So I guess that's why it is like the original source.
It is, I guess. God, I hadn't thought of it that way. I also think about it a lot in the sense that when I was growing up and like when a band, you know, like the Pixies or the Kaiser Chiefs whatever. Like when they came to Ireland, it was such a big deal because people didn't always tour in Ireland, or if they did, they did every other tour because it's just, they generally stopped in London.
Yeah.
And so there was this level of gratitude whenever anyone came. And then when you go to a gig, it just those early experiences going to gigs as a teenager was just so electric because everyone was so grateful, and then the artist always felt so grateful for the gratitude, and generally being an American artist who has some kind of romantic view of Ireland anyway, and so it's so electrifying. And I also think it's the reason why I don't really go to that many gigs in London, because I find London crowds so dull.
Yeah, they are. I mean,
and London shows dull as a result.
Yeah, it's the reason it's great to go to Plymouth.
Yeah, it is.
Because
like,
it's great. It's great to go to Plymouth, Basingstoke, these places, Aberdeen. These places can be so happy you've come through and made the effort. London, it's like, oh, it's just another night. I've already been to a gig tonight.
Totally.
It's the third of the night.
London might be the worst city in the world. Why do we continue to live
here? I know. It's the worst. It's always the worst one to play. And Brighton's quite similar. Like, obviously, I love these places, but a Brighton crowd, they turn up on time. Like for the main act, so they miss the support because they kind of know how gigs work.
Yeah, I do that.
They don't. Yeah, because we're London's now. You know, in Plymouth they'll be there at six. Ipswich, I remember playing Ipswich once, and the whole thing was like, well, I was doing a support, and everyone was sitting in their seats.
Wow,
of course they are. They're like, we're only going to go out twice.
Yeah, it's only a couple of nights out.
Twice
a month.
Yeah. If you're the support act, they're going to buy your CD as well, because you know, because they're probably going to see two shows a year. And might as well buy the CD because they're not going to see many bands. We're huge in Ipswich.
I like that. I like that so much. Carry on.
I don't know where we are.
Oh, so we the Woman in Me sells 12 million records.
15.
15 million records. Now what?
Now she's huge. But she does get a new manager. She gets Bruce Springsteen's manager at this point.
Wow.
And because she's like, oh, now I want to dominate the world.
Okay, so does this thirst for domination come from, do you think?
I think she just wants to be... I don't know, actually, because you're right, because she just doesn't play live at this point. People are suspicious of that, by the way. You know,
does she play an instrument?
Yeah, she can play all the instruments.
Oh, all the instruments. Okay.
I think she can play them all. Mm-hmm. I've seen her holding all the instruments.
Okay, great.
But mind you, I've been pictured holding a guitar and I can't play that. But I don't know where it comes from. I think it's just that she loves her songs. She loves writing the songs. And she has sort of, I think she has appreciated how much she's resonated with people.
Yeah.
Like how much these songs have resonated. Because she's writing from a sort of very female perspective. Like all the songs, they're like the role reversal songs, or they're just about being a woman. And I think she's enjoyed, like, her fans. She has a very sentimental garbage fan base, I guess. It's like 90% women, 10% gay men. That is her fan base, not always. I don't know if it always was. Like, I do think it might be that sort of Titanic thing where men were into it, but as more women got into it,
they
turn away from it and they kind of begin to ridicule it. Because there was every sort of reason for men to be into it. Mutt Lang's involved.
Yeah.
You know, but I think that as more women get into it,
I also think, particularly with this next album, which the name of the album is Come On Over, sorry. Yeah. There's so many hits on that album. You're Still the One, Man, I Feel Like a Woman, Don't Impress Me Much, that are just so, I associate with like a kind of a chick flickiness, right? Kind of like, that is the song that you set like a woman in like a ad for shaving your legs kind of thing. Man, I'll feel like, it's like, it's very like, yeah, girls, we know it's the 90s, it's the go-go 90s, you know?
Yeah.
And I can see why men would jump off the ship at that point. It doesn't, because that's fine though, because it doesn't feel like it's for them.
No.
In a way.
No, it probably wasn't for straight men. Like, it's not designed for
it's
them.
It's so fucking female.
Yeah.
It's great.
Yeah, it is. I mean, she is... She's nailing that experience. You know, she's saying, this is somewhere for us all to go. And she's obviously very happy with that. Like, with that being her audience.
Yeah.
Because she doubles down on it on the next album.
I think that is really smart.
And she, like, triples down on Up. You know, she does keep just being like, this is great. I'm very happy. And maybe that's just, I guess she would if you'd found an audience who really responded to you and got you, and you got there, you know, then...
It's so interesting, artists and the writers and musicians or whatever, the ones who see the people who their work is resonating with and for, and they really double down into that, and they're like, I'm going to have this... I'm not sure what her relationship with her fans is like, but like, you know, you look at someone like Taylor, who like from the early days was like, saw the girls who were listening to her music and inviting them to listen to parties and making them feel like they were part of this thing with her, as opposed to like constantly trying to court a population you're never going to win over, which, having just watched the Robbie Williams documentary, which is 6 hours of misery, that is like somebody who had an idea of a person in their head that they were going to win over, that they were never going to win over.
So who's he trying to win over?
Like the NME and stuff.
Okay, you know,
like,
so the indie crowd.
The indie crowd. And like, he's so just apoplectic for all those years about like, I write these songs, like everyone thinks it's Guy Chambers, so I'm leaving Guy Chambers, so people can see I can write it alone, and you know, I'm a mastermind of this. I'm the biggest selling artist in the world. How come you will not respect me yet?
That's so interesting, isn't it?
And then you get these other artists like Shania, who are like, I will add more exclamation points to my songs, more descriptions of how fun it is to be a woman on a night out, which are like most of her favourites, my favourite of her songs, are just like, it's good to be a lady. Like,
That's basically,
there aren't that many songs like that.
It's so celebratory, and it comes from such a sort of... And also the songs that are like that are kind of... They can be a bit... Like, she does... I think maybe it's because of her backstory, and you kind of give her that sort of... She's written these with such adversity that you kind of give her... If Shania wants to have fun, it's like on a night out. Look, if Shania wants to have a good... Look, let's just go to that bar. If Shania wants to go, let's just go. Because you know she's been through so much. It's like when you've got a friend who's broken up with someone. You just do what they... You just do what they do. Like, and Shania's whole life is like... That's what, if Shania wants to go there, and I think that's where she takes it, why she takes her audience there. She's always like the fun friend who's been through a lot, and we need to be there for them.
Yeah,
and she is just going to give you a great night if you follow her.
Yeah, I can see that there is so much to be had in being a part of this fandom, because like, even listening, you very kindly made me a playlist to give me the intro to Shania and listening to that. And like, you know, we're in a depressing part of the year. It's getting darker every day. Like, I'm not feeling great physically. Like, it's just like, blah, kind of. And this, the way this fucking music will lift you up.
Yeah.
And like, I know it seems so trite to be like, it just makes me happy or whatever. It's just like, it's so simple,
yeah,
but it's so fucking uplifting. It's like a baraka. Like, it's so good.
Yeah. It's like a baraka. It really is. And it's funny. I mean, she's funny as well. Like, she, and she's quite, her lyrics are always quite conversational, which she, yeah, again, was quite, she was like, she did that on purpose.
Mm.
She was aware that she wrote, she wanted to write in quite a conversational way. And,
and what does she say about her writing craft?
I think that she works on it very hard.
Yeah.
But that she did, for sort of, for Coming Over, she wanted it to feel like the sort of phrases she was using would be a bit, would be more conversational, would be feel like she was chatting to friends.
Yeah.
And that's for like, for Coming Over, which she definitely, you know, she's probably one of the reasons. I mean, I don't use a lot of these phrases and everything, but Come On Over, you know, it's like,
yeah,
it is, it is quite, it's, you feel like she's your friend, I guess.
Yeah. Which is a part of why it feels so very hen nighty or,
yeah,
something.
Yeah, I think so. It does feel like, it's just like, it's, yeah, quite girls. And even when the sort of subjects get dark, you know,
yeah,
it's that's okay, because that can happen on a night out. You know, that yeah, you have those moments as you've had, you know, then you might start talking about domestic violence. Yeah, that can happen, like on a night out. Like,
yeah.
And,
yeah,
but Shania's, she's always going to go, you're back on the dance floor before, yeah, you know it, you know.
Men's shirts, short skirts.
I know.
Like, there's something we talked about in the Girls Just Wanna Have Fun episode, is that there's like bits of that song, it's like such a silly song, but then if I hear it out and I'm on the dance floor, I'll just sort of like clutch my chest at a point and be like, yeah, oh, it's become emotionally overwhelming to me.
Yeah.
And on that song, that like, that after the, yeah, men's, yeah, short skirts, it really upsets me.
Upsets you?
I don't, it's just like, it's like too much almost.
It's too emotionally,
yeah,
it just resonates too much with you.
Yeah.
It is an incredible line. I don't, yeah, I'm not, like, every time I hear it, it's like, it's such a sexy line as well.
Yeah, it's so sexy. And it's so good.
And it's so empowering.
It's, I mean, Shania, so embarrassing. I'm getting really warm and emotional thinking of
that. I mean, Shania is, she is empowering, but never like in a very special way. I do think,
yeah,
I feel it very empowered by that line.
Yeah.
And obviously me wearing a men's shirt would be fairly normal. I mean, you know.
Yeah, there's something, I'm sure there's a whole genre of songs that we could think of lots of them together, but like, of like songs that like are silly in premise and silly in introduction, and then they just build to some kind of strange universal truth that sort of like gets you, and that sort of makes the song like really indelible.
Yeah.
For example, as much as I think Taylor Swift's career will last many eons and great, I think Shake It Off will eventually be forgotten, because it's a silly song that means nothing. Like, there's no part of Shake It Off that feels like it means anything.
Yeah.
Whereas,
I know,
Man,
yeah,
I Feel Like a Woman, that bit, there's just bits of it that I'm just like, just want to scream and cry.
I know. And that's got the line about the best thing about being a woman is,
yeah, her prerogative to have a little fun.
And in thinking about Shania, as I have done for the last, yeah, 2 months, ever, yeah, since you said, come on, let's talk about Shania, I have, yeah, thought about that line a lot. Like, because, like, is that the best thing? Like, is the prerogative of being a woman to have a little fun? Like, is that,
yeah,
and I started to think, like, is that what, basically I started to ask around, do men have fun? And
no.
I would ask around, because, and basically I was at a wedding,
uh-huh,
and a friend of mine was explaining how one of the reasons he'd broken up with his girlfriend before was because he wouldn't dance at weddings. And I suddenly thought how strange it was. And then I started to worry that, you know, had Shania, you know, telling me that the best thing about being a woman was the prerogative to have a little fun. And I was like, do men even know how to have fun?
No.
And and as I've asked around, I'm finding less evidence for them knowing how to have fun. And what?
This is very big.
It is. This is big. I say.
This is very big. Something I found myself saying a lot lately is, I think men have been societally groomed to be an army for so many hundreds of years now that they don't know how to not be an army.
Yeah.
Like, I include my lovely husband in this, and like, we've been together for a very long time, and he's a very fun man. I would say he's actually pound for pound funner than me.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's fun.
And that's fun. And I'm pretty fun. We're a fun couple. You want to be next to us at a wedding. But like, there's a thing of like, when left to his own devices or left alone, he doesn't know how to make things nice for himself or something. You know what I mean? Like, he'll just like sit in a room in his coat on his computer and not think to like put a candle on or make the lighting nice or put nice music on. He'll just like be listening to heavy metal in a coat, looking at fonts in the cold. And it won't occur to him unless there are other people and specifically women around to make fun happen.
That's so nice. I'll definitely like, if I'm on my own, it'd be like, what's for dinner? I'll just walk to the freezer.
Yeah.
Oh, it's fish fingers then. No thought, like, what would I like for dinner?
No, not at all. I listened to a podcast recently that had two male hosts, and one of them was talking about very lovingly about his wife, and he was like, I came downstairs the other day and Meredith had cut half a lemon to put in her water, and I could not think of that even occurring to me. I was like, poor men.
I know.
They have no prerogative to have a little fun.
I know, they don't. Because I don't know why they're not dancing at weddings. But they're not. I'd dance at a wedding because the alternative is
talking at a wedding.
Talking about the Premier League. And so it's like, get to the dance floor, you know. So I'd have a dance. But I do, as I've asked around, people have been like, no, dancing is...
Yeah.
People, like, couples fall out. The biggest arguments they've ever had is over, like, one of them's made their husband dance, and then afterwards, I can't believe you did that.
Do you like dancing?
Yeah, I like dancing.
I love dancing!
I do love to dance, because, you know, it's fun. It's a funny thing to do. I'm quite aware of it, and I understand...
Yeah.
I'm probably more aware of it than women are. Mm. Women are probably... better dancers.
We've got more to move and more our outfits to move in. Yeah. Which is...
You've probably spent more time practicing dancing. Like I did, obviously when I was like 10, I'd probably practice a bit of dancing.
Yeah.
But so when I dance like George Michael. don't dance like George Michael, but it is reminiscent of. So I think men tend to learn one dance. Mm-hmm. And so like a few years later, they'd probably learn how to dance like Bez. And now that's their dance.
Yeah.
So men learn dance and they'll stick to it their whole lives. So I do like it, but I'm not a good dancer.
I'm glad that we got together for this episode about dancing. But
sorry, we're talking about dancing.
But I love going dancing with Gavin. It's my favorite thing. We sometimes go just two of us. So
that's really nice.
It's really nice.
But men have fun without women? I don't know.
They don't know how not to be an army.
I don't know. Yeah, and they don't. And it always seems to be like when I thought about the ways the men had fun, it always seemed to be. A victim that there was always like bants or like roasts. Like there's always like, is there always for men to have fun? Does someone else have to not be having fun?
Yes, that because of army.
Yeah, because of the army, and that would make sense, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Because men are an army, and that's why they missed out. And basically, if one of them goes and has fun, the whole what happened the patriarchy collapses. Is that what they're holding up by not? Is that what they're? I don't know what they're fighting.
What are they fighting? Well, that's the thing. That's
by
the
not dancing. What are they not dancing because they're fighting something? Is it just in their heads? What is the battle?
It must suck. Like, I wouldn't be a man if you paid me.
No.
And they're charging me, so. Statistically. Fuck, they don't. The best thing about being a woman is her prerogative to have a little fun.
I mean, women aren't as afraid of being humiliated. Like, they aren't as afraid of being embarrassed.
That's so true.
Because
it's like
they're
that
used
Margaret Atwood line is that men are afraid that women won't laugh at their jokes, and women are afraid that men will kill them.
It's so true.
Yeah.
It's so true. I guess, like, women aren't scared of humiliation. Society is like, humiliates them, tries to humiliate everywhere they turn. They're trying to, you know, of course they're not. Men are like, I think that's what men are, you know, the reason men don't dance is because, A, they're in an army and they're scared of being humiliated.
Yeah.
I think they're scared
of
embarrassed.
Well, the thing of men are in the army, even when they're not in the army, is that they find comfort and uniformity when they're together and identifying the weakness in others because it's army.
Yeah.
Wow. I love it when we get a bit like
but
this.
But they also, the well of nonsense is
the well of nonsense is deep. I love it.
Yeah. But they also, what's also weird about men, this isn't really like, but is that they, when they chat to each other, they disagree with each other the whole time. Whereas when women chat to each other, they're like really supportive.
It's very yes and with women. Yes, women are in improv all the time. And.
Whereas men, it's like, it doesn't matter what you say, they're going to disagree with you.
Yeah.
It doesn't really matter. I don't think men have opinions. Their opinion is the opposite of what you just said. That's basically what men's opinion is. They don't have actually any line on anything. That's just my experience.
You hate men.
I don't hate them. I just mistrust them.
Okay. Good, you should.
Yeah.
Wow.
I don't... They're okay.
I like If You Want to Touch Your Ass a lot.
It's an incredible song title and it's great advice.
Yeah.
Like that's like the, obviously it's quite low level. Like that's the lowest it should be. Like, if you want to touch your ass, simple, exclamation mark. It's like, which does actually make that quite a strange sentence. I think the exclamation mark on
Is there an exclamation mark?
Yeah.
There is, yeah.
Yeah. But it
follows the song, whatever you do, exclamation point, don't, exclamation point. So if you, but it's a fun, it's like, but again, that thing of Shania is really good at writing songs that are like funny and silly, but have like the sort of like the kernel of like truth and justice in them.
Yeah.
And like the thing about If You Want to Touch Your Ass is that it sounds like If You Want to Touch Your Ass.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, that's fun.
Yeah. She knows, she does, I think she'd appreciate that joke because she is funny.
Yeah.
She would definitely know that's.
I mean, the peak of her humor obviously comes with That Don't Press Me Much.
Yeah.
Which was literally, I don't know if you watch Drag Race at all.
Not since season 7.
So, was that okay?
That was just the last one I saw. Okay. I don't know what season we're on now.
UK season at the moment. Kate Butch, who's a great queen, did a performance of, basically the runway prompt was Icons. And she came on in the leopard print, Don't Impress Me Much, Get Up. But she also performed the entire thing of like, taking out a picture of Brad Pitt out of her handbag and sort of like shaking her head and throwing it away. And it was just great. And it's like oh yeah, this is a drag queen song.
Yeah. Yeah. It's an amazing, because it's, obviously women spend a lot of their time feeling like they're under pressure to impress
other people.
So it just flips it straight. And Shania is just like, the fact that she sort of casts men in this role of being the ones that are trying to impress her. She often casts men in the role reversal, and I like that.
Yes, she does.
Which is a really fun thing. Like, Honey, I'm Home. She just reverse, you know, she flips
that.
So she's the one that's coming home from work and wants to get a bone for her dog, which I guess is another good joke.
Yeah.
So that's kind of her thing. And that's just one of those songs that definitely sort of taps into that.
Yeah.
That idea that, because it's Shania, like, she does sort of, she doesn't belittle men, but she sort of, it's that idea, that sort of Tammy Wynette thing. It's like, after all, he's just a man. In Stand By Your Man, where she says that line, and I kind of feel she sort of takes that line and just, like, men, they're not, she loves them. That's the thing, she absolutely loves them, but she also just sort of doesn't expect too much of them.
Yeah.
She doesn't expect much of men.
And why should she?
Because she's got no examples of it.
So she's got hits coming out of her arse. How's the marriage going?
Marriage is going all right, actually. Certainly in, you know, 97, she's doing right. It's certainly doing okay. Mutt moved to Switzerland. He's a very private man. Like, there aren't many photos of him. I don't think there's any. I've never seen a video of Mutt. So he moves to Switzerland for a bit of privacy. She is by now getting very famous. I mean, Coming Over has sold 40 million copies.
Wow.
So it's like the 9th best-selling album of all time.
What?
Any genre. Like, I think I am always surprised by how huge Shania was.
Yeah.
Like, it's quite mad.
Because, for sure, she was huge. And, like, every time you turn on MTV, she was there. And every time the radio was on, she was there. But so were many things.
I know.
And, like, so it's hard to think of her as this, like, huge record breaker, because she just felt like one of a cast of many characters in the 90s.
Yeah.
You know?
But she was kind of, I think, because of the countries. I mean, country sells a lot.
Yeah.
Anyway, Garth Brooks is selling way more than any, you know, in the 90s, he's selling way more than anyone. Mm. And so it's quite, I think, with that country base, she's selling a lot. And then she adds pop to it and a bit of rock, kind of get all
she's
the bases.
Scooping up everyone.
She scoops up everyone. It just becomes huge. And it's quite mad. Even now, like, it is mad that it's the 9th selling biggest album ever. And the biggest selling album by a female artist of any genre. So it's crazy. So it's outselling Madonna. You know, it's Madonna's from that time. You know, it's outselling.
But why does country sell the way it does?
I think it's because it just...
Gas stations?
Yeah, gas stations. It's just working class America. Like, so much of America, middle America particularly, is just country. I mean, it is mad. You've driven across that. You know, it is mad how every radio station you switch on is country. Like, but it's a genre that people sort of don't listen to at all, aren't aware of. You know, the biggest selling album last year was by a country artist, but you wouldn't know that.
Yeah.
Like in America, which is crazy.
It's just like, yeah, it's just such a, there's just so many people. Like,
yeah,
America.
It's just so many people. And
nobody
just,
knows how many.
They just love country music. And I think they have to sort of balance the charts. Otherwise, it would just be like the Billboard. I think they have to balance it. So they have to sort of balance out the areas where country, otherwise country would just dominate those charts as well.
But there's also something happening in the 90s specifically, right? I feel like there's like a line dancing return.
Yeah.
There's like something kind of rhinestone cowboy happening.
It definitely happens. Like women are like in the 90s as a country, like they're like ruling as well. That's the crazy thing. The chicks are about to come out and then like Leanne Rimes. So there's these huge like female artists on the way, which I guess Shania probably paves the way for. It just makes it like, so you know, they can, because radio stations are certainly often afraid to play women. They still are. I mean, it's got worse, but they're not sure about, they rely on the sort of male country artists. So I don't know why. I think it's just all of them coming out at the same time, and men maybe not putting out. I mean, Garth's putting out some big records, but the 90s were just huge for country anyway.
Yeah.
Was just a big time.
Why?
Okay, let's have a think about why. I tell you what it probably is. It's a return to, this is quite like a musical answer, but after Urban Cowboy, the film with John Travolta comes in.
Yes.
So the 70s of country are kind of like a golden age for women, like Dolly's coming through, but it's like very pop women, Crystal Gayle, Dolly Parton, people like that. And at the same time, the men are doing like Willie Nelson. It's like the outlaw movement. So you've got the 70s are very big. And then 80s, there's a dip. Like right at the beginning, you get the Urban Cowboy film and it becomes like suddenly sort of country fashion is very popular. And a sort of certain kind of sort of poppy country. And then you get, because there's this sort of, because country becomes very successful and quite mainstream, there's a reaction against that that comes from the authentic side, and you get a movement of neo-traditionalists coming through, of which Steve Earle is one, and you get a whole, and Garth Brooks is one of those as well. So they come in and they kind of return country to a very traditional sound, albeit with like a new production, and that's probably
when you're thinking of that, what I'm thinking of is like, so I went to the lane, my dog and my four. It's like that, like
that kind of
boring.
Country, that kind of that kind of country, yeah.
Yeah.
Very traditional, very, yeah, but very.
Very easy to ignore. Not like.
Yeah, not like Shania. Yeah, not like, not, it's not poppy, but it's certainly sort of, you do get this, country becomes emboldened within itself by this all these new artists who return it to something that's seen as very authentic. Everyone could get behind it. The poppiness of the 70s and the early 80s has sort of been cleared away, and now these twangy country, and you get that. And which Shania is, well, Garth is definitely a part of that. So Garth blows up, and kind of at the same time as he blows up, he sort of destroys it because he's so big, he becomes bigger than everything. And I guess Garth's success in the early 90s was paving way for a certain kind of like a new supercharged country.
Yeah.
Which Shania fits very neatly into. And you've got, there's a lot of women coming through, like Reba McEntire, Martina McBride, all these sort of big women coming through, you know, big names coming through.
I just came up in my head with a simile that is so insane and I think makes no sense.
Let's hear it.
You know how everyone loves Wansits? And we've had Wansits forever. And they've always been in lunchboxes and around.
Yeah.
And then there's been a breaking through moment of now we have the giant Wotsits. And giant Wotsits are everywhere. And you can get prawn cocktail giant Wotsits as well. And they're so good that I've actually forgotten that Wotsits were ever a small size.
That's exactly what happened. Garth Brooks is the giant Wotsit of 90s country. And Shania is
the prawn cocktail.
Oh, you get it. You got it. Yeah.
I got it. Okay.
That's made sense. That is actually what that is. That is exactly what happens, though. Yeah. You're right. And if you held like a normal size Watsit in your hand.
Yeah, regulation Watsit. Yeah,
you'd be like,
this is not enough me anymore.
This is not, no. And that's what Shania does to country.
Yeah, she's the prawn cocktail giant Watsit.
Yeah, she basically is. Yeah, and after Shania, things are never the same again. They can't be. She changed it. Her and Garth changed it.
Where do we go from here vis-a-vis Watsits and country music? Watsits, I guess now the Watsits become more confessional.
Watsits are like Americana. It's like we see, you know, it's like maybe there's 40 people at the show. It's very good. Very good. But there's no one's really into them. We really want the big Watsit.
Yeah, yeah. We
the big bag as well. The big bag.
The big,
big
Watsit
yeah.
in the big bag. good. Glad about that. Yeah.
Line dancing actually probably comes in with the urban cowboy era.
Yeah.
Like the sort of in the early 80s, people are probably getting into it. And then,
yeah.
I mean, it's fun, isn't it? The woolpackers and all that stuff.
Line dancing is coming back again now.
Yeah.
Yeah. I know a few women who are part of like lesbian line dancing communities. So,
I mean, country's coming back, like, which is probably Taylor.
Uh-huh.
I think that's probably like, but then it's like, you know, Haim
like,
and Boy Genius and Waxahachie, you know, Jess Williamson, all these. It's all, they grew up, I guess they grew up with Shania and then Taylor. Mm. And so you do get, and so suddenly they're just all these, the country's just in everything now, as well as being in country itself. It feels like every artist has a little bit of country in them.
Yeah. Yeah, because inevitably, if you're somebody who starts their songwriting career with like an acoustic guitar in their bedroom, you're probably teaching yourself with country songs.
Yeah, exactly.
And therefore, you know.
With, yes, and with, especially with Taylor songs. If someone's like 10 years old in 2006, they're going to be mid-20s now and they're going to be...
Yeah.
They grew up on, and you know, however pop she gets, she still has that sort of country thing of lyrics first. You know, the lyrics and the story are still, still what drives it.
We're running out of time.
Oh, God. We definitely run out of time.
But we need to carry on with Shania's life story and what happened to her many betrayals and heartbreaks.
Okay, so let's go. So they moved to Switzerland. Mm-hmm. Shania comes off tour. He goes first. She moves to Switzerland to like a 46-room mansion in the middle of nowhere. Her only friends are Mutt Lange's assistant, Marie and Thibault, and her husband, Frederic Thibault. She has a child, her and Mariana pregnant at the same time. They're really their only friends. They live in a huge house which has 45 empty rooms, I guess, and they live in this like little village in Switzerland. She has a baby and they're just living their lives. She puts out a couple of albums, but country has changed for various reasons. Mm-hmm. And so
Watsits, etc.
Watsits, 9/11. You know, it's the same. It's the same thing. And so they just sort of exist in there. She's not really. She puts out Up the album and tours it, but then she goes back to Switzerland. And while she's touring the Up album, she does go for a ride in the forest on her horse and gets bitten by a tick.
No.
Yeah.
She does not get Lyme disease.
She gets Lyme disease.
No.
She loses her voice. So she starts to, while she's on tour for Up, she starts to get dizzy spells on stage and doesn't know why. And she keeps like having these millisecond blackouts every 30 seconds and doesn't know why. They can't work out why. And then she loses her voice.
What? Yeah.
I know, it's the tragedy that sort of keeps hitting tonight. It's just like, it's almost like they sort of ran out of plot ideas.
Yeah, because isn't there's frequently a thing over like whether Lyme disease is even real or not. It is a thing, but like obviously it is.
Yeah.
It happened to Shania. Happened to Avril Lavigne as well, right?
Yeah, do people not think it's a thing?
Yeah, there's a lot of arguments that it's like a psychosomatic illness.
Oh, maybe she just lost her voice.
And that it's often experienced by famous people who have gone through so much trauma, both physical and mental, through punishing touring schedules and just like the head fuck of fame, that why is it always that famous people are getting Lyme disease even though they have these incredibly clean lives?
Yeah,
and then it often results in them not being able to physically perform. And basically, I think it's accused of being like heavy legs or whatever, you know.
Okay,
is what I've heard. I have no dog in this fight, but I'm like
no. But is it? Do you know? Are there any like people who aren't famous who've got Lyme disease?
I've never heard of a normal person getting Lyme disease.
No. Wow.
Yeah, it's often played this like in kind of movies and TV of like a character with Lyme disease is heard of like a bit batty kind of thing. Because they think they have Lyme disease, but what they actually have is a host of undiagnosed mental and physical problems they're calling Lyme disease.
Which is like from trauma and stuff.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, that could tie in.
Again, that could be totally untrue.
Yeah, I mean, I'm trusting Shania's...
Me too, I trust Shania.
She got, but at the same time, she does go through a lot now. So she's... Her and Matt are starting to have... They've been married for like 14 years, I guess, at this point. And they're starting to have a few marital problems. Shania's best friend out there is Marianne, his assistant. They've got really close. You know, they both had children exactly the same time. She's a best friend and confidant. And she says to Marianne, you know, I think, you know, me and Matt are growing apart. Marianne says, oh, strangely, me and my husband Frederick also growing apart, but that's, you know... Shania's like, oh, you know, I just, you know, we're struggling a bit at the moment. Marianne says, don't, you know.
We're all been there.
Yeah, we've all been there. Don't worry. It'll be absolutely fine. Shania and Matt go, for 3 months of every year, they go to New Zealand for a little time away.
Lush.
And yeah, it's great. You can do that. You know, you're ninth biggest year. You can do that, yeah. And so they go this time in 2007, I think it must be, and... Matt flies home a couple of times, which is strange. He hasn't done that before.
That's a long flight.
He says he's got to work. Yeah, it's a long flight back to Switzerland. Shania's like left alone with her son and whoever she's with in New Zealand and calls back home a couple of times to Marianne to say, you know, Matt's gone home and I'm worried about our marriage. He won't look me in the eye. There's definitely, you know, I'm worried maybe he's having an affair. Marianne says, absolutely not. Absolutely ridiculous. Who would have a who would cheat?
Who would he cheat with?
There's no one here
except me.
Me and Frederick. There's no one here. So and also he wouldn't cheat on you? A Shania Twain, like who would? Yeah. Which is a question I'm asking Mark now. Like who would cheat on Shania Twain? Like who? It's madness to even think of it. Anyway,
even think of it.
She returns home, back to Switzerland, and seems to have some sort of dinner party where she confronts them. She asks Marianne. And ask them, are you having an affair? Uh-huh. They deny the affair. They're like, you look crazy. Of course, no, we're not. We're not having an affair. No, Shania is going crazy at this point because she thinks, like, before that, she thought that Matt might be like, have like some sort of terminal illness because he was acting so weird and just couldn't, you know, like, anyone in this situation. She starts making up these things of like, what could it possibly be? Because she refuses to sort of acknowledge that maybe the worst is true. Anyway, for some reason they don't tell her, but they get Frederick to tell her. So the next day, Frederick, Marianne's husband, tells Shania that they've been having an affair the whole time. And he says he's found out by looking at like their bank statements and they've been like going for spa breaks together. And,
what?
But Marianne had like, you know...
Marianne.
Had said, you know, nothing's happening. Had assured her that nothing was happening. And it was her all along. So they get divorced.
Judas.
In 2010. Yeah, I mean, she doesn't really ever forgive Marianne.
Nor should she.
She kind of forgives Matt just because...
Father of her kids.
Yeah, and she's got that thing. It's like, after all, he's just a man. It's like that thing. It's like, she expects so little of them. It's always like that.
But she expects a lot from women. And particularly her closest confidant.
Her closest friend, Marianne. Yeah. So that's the betrayal that comes. And she loses... With Matt, she loses like... her musical partner as well, which I think is the sort of that she does lose both her husband and the person who she's made all her successful records with. So it's tough.
That's really tough.
And she's getting her voice back. She's having.
But then,
hang on
a minute.
Who's this on the phone?
It's the other person who lives in Switzerland that isn't currently.
Well, it can't be. She's not speaking to Marianne. Still hasn't spoken to her.
not speaking to Matt.
Really speak to Matt. Hang on, Frederick's on the phone. So Frederick, so then she's in, I think she's back in Canada and someone suggests, it's like, hey, we can't really help you with this, Shania. This is such an awful thing you've been through. You know who would know?
Yeah.
I think it's her sister.
The only
says,
person who you can relate to.
Yeah, who
moment.
Can relate to would be Frederick. Why don't you give Frederick a call? You always got on. And they start chatting loads, getting on well. Lovely. Just friends, just getting on well. And then I think it's their kids, weirdly, who are like... They're hanging out one week because obviously the kids go to their separate houses every other weekend in Switzerland. So,
how old are the kids at this point?
So they've each got a kid. 10.
Okay.
So the kids are there. And I think the kids are like, they say, why don't you two just get together? Why don't you two just kiss? Stop messing about. Get a room, will you? That sort of thing.
Aww.
And so they get together. And Frederick is so sweet. I see him around because he's such a part of Shania's life. Like when I went to an HMV signing with Shania, and Frederick was there just shopping for DVDs.
Oh.
And when I saw her the other day in concert, he was on stage like taking photos of her. He was like a Nestle executive or something. But he's not anymore. Now he just sort of follows Shania around. Because who wouldn't?
Oh. I mean, you follow your girlfriend around, which exactly. I find very nice.
That's true, actually. I am the Frederick T.
You are the Frederick of Girl Ray.
I am. Oh, God. I would I'd go DVD shopping while they do signings. Yeah,
that's lush.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah, so it's got a happy end. It's got and she gets her voice back. Her voice, yeah, she has like laryngoplasty or something, something on her voice book to fix that. So she's got her voice back and it's just a bit more raspy now. And she's amazing. I feel like now she talks about live shows, she loves them, finally loves them. I think she finally understands that it's not about her, it's about the audience.
Oh, that's so interesting.
Which I think before she just always thought like, it's about me, but I'm not getting enough from this.
Yeah.
Why is it all about me? I mean, she's a Virgo, you know, she's like, we had the same birthday. So I kind of have this insight into her, to her work, into her mind, because we're both born on the same 28th of August.
You're both crucially virgins.
Yeah, so.
Crucially virgins who never had sex.
And that's not what a Virgo is. So now she's enjoying it. And she loves the shows. And seeing the shows now, she kind of brings people up. And she appears, she starts the show in the crowd. They push her out in a box. You don't really know where she's going to appear. And then she just pops up, sometimes on the top, sometimes down the bottom.
Oh.
And she just jumps out of a box and it's like, here's Shania. Because she's like, it's not about Shania anymore. It's about all of us. Because like in the song, it's like she is a... She is like an ecologist. She's a romance novelist. Oh, yeah. You know, she is all these things. She's all women everywhere around the world.
And as a woman, that is true. I can confirm. Please,
can you confirm if that's true?
Confirm she is me.
Yeah.
Nice. Wow. It is kind of, obviously I love Taylor Swift a lot, but it's amazing when you think of like Taylor Swift, who's like, she's written these sort of like Bibles and elegies on heartbreak and betrayal and mistrust, and really nothing very bad has ever happened to her.
That's the thing.
And she's just basically talking about boyfriends, and that's why people love her, because they can see the mundanity of being in an everyday relationship as a 33-year-old woman is in glorious technicolor in the Taylor Swift universe. But then there's this other take on that, where you can have the most tragic life possible and just write the campest, most upbeat, incredible songs because you know what true misery is and you don't want anyone else to have to go through it.
Yeah.
And there's something so generous about that.
I know, I do. I think I was thinking if a man had been through what, like, had been through what Shania, you'd probably end up with Jeff Buckley. Like, you would end up, he would want to share the misery.
Yeah.
And Taylor doesn't really share the misery. I think she's kind of like...
She wants to give you a place where you can be miserable.
Yeah, she's like, it's a reassuring arm around the shoulder, isn't it?
Yeah,
as opposed to Jeff Buckley, which is like, pity me.
Pity, or like an Elliot Smith.
And whereas Shania's thought like, no time for that.
Yeah.
We've been through enough.
Yeah, life is hard enough. Yeah. I just respect the grit of that so much.
Yeah.
I love her. I can't believe I came into this podcast being like, I like Shania Twain. She's got some fun songs. And now I'm just like, I will march in that army. I will be an army for Shania.
the opposing army.
The opposing
army. Oh, God. Finally a war.
Finally what they've been waiting for. Joff, go on. We have to go. It's been so long.
I'm so sorry.
I just want to talk to you all the time. What are you plugging at the moment?
Not a lot, really. I mean, I'm in a country band called Legends of Country.
Yeah.
So if you
if you're in the mood to hear some country, and you should be after
but
that.
But really, like I said,
do you want to eat some little watsits?
Yeah, we're definitely a little watsit. Definitely, if you like little watsits, never gonna be a big watsit.